I'm available to start at right tackle.
You can't see when I have clothes on.
Right. Well, there's not an even playing field. There's never been an even playing field. There never will be an even playing field.
But... What shampoo do you use on your hair?
You don't need to be Superman to play in this offense.
You're listening to The Red Zone.
Welcome, Badgers fans, to another episode of The Red Zone. We are here for our second podcast of the week, and the second week we are trying to do our mailbag, our weekly mailbag in podcast form. Now, you know, typically in the past, this has been, you know, the mailbag has been a column on Madison.com in print form. But last week we tried it as a podcast, and I think some people liked it. And we're going to try that again this week. If you want to let me know on Twitter at Jason_Galloway whether you like, you know, this format of the mailbag better, just let me know. We got a lot of questions this week, though, so I'm going to get straight into it. We got a lot of questions on Jazz PB, so I'm going to just address that first. And Eric the Red, at Real Eric the Red on Twitter, asks, you know, is there any reason that Chris won't directly address the PB situation? Has Sports Info been asked to confirm that he's even on the team? And then someone replied with, sometimes he thinks our the beat reporters don't ask questions of Chris because he's a nice guy, which is not true at all. We ask him what he needs to be asked. And he says this PB deal is weird. It either reflects poorly on Chris or the program, and your money is on the former, and Paul Chris doesn't want to say. Now, all that is incorrect, okay? I'm going to try to clear this up the best that I can. The PB situation doesn't reflect poorly on anybody. From what I understand, it's a legitimate personal thing that PV is dealing with, and he is still not with the team. He's left the team because of this personal reason, and you know, the Badgers don't want to get more into it publicly than that. I don't think it's something that I don't think, you know, it's not a situation, from what I understand, it's not a situation where PV has just quit the team or anything like that. It's you know, I think it's something that it's not really anybody's fault, or it's not you know, it doesn't reflect poorly on anybody. I think it's just a matter of him, you know, dealing with something, and he's not with the team right now. I probably wouldn't, you know, wouldn't count on him returning this season. I don't know that for sure, but I don't think people should read into the PV situation too much and think that that something bad has gone on here or that it's an attitude problem or anything like that. I really don't think that's the situation. I think it's just a personal matter that he's dealing with, and I think Wisconsin just wants to leave it at that. So, you know, sorry we can't completely clear up the exact specifics of it, but that's the situation now as far as I know. Let's see, Bucky fan at DJ4641 asks, how many picks does Horny throw Saturday? You know, he's thrown at least one interception in every Big Ten game so far, so I think it's probably, you know, I think he's probably going to throw one. You hope that he can clean that up at some point. Iowa's coming off a game where they intercepted JT Barrett. I can't remember if it was four or five times. I think it was four times. So that's something to definitely keep an eye on. I mean, if Hornibrook goes out there and throws four interceptions, Wisconsin's probably not winning this game. I think he'll probably throw one. You know, that's kind of been, you know, par for the course in recent games. But, you know, I think it would be huge for Wisconsin if he could, you know, clean up the mistakes and have a turnover-free game. We'll have to wait and see if that happens. Now, his one against Indiana I didn't think there was much he could do. You know, I think, you know, he got the pressure from the blind side and got hit from behind as he threw. I don't think he had held onto the ball all that long. It might have been around 3 seconds. I didn't exactly time it with the stopwatch. So I you know, he was about to give Cephas a chance in the back of the end zone to make a play. So he does need to clean up his mistakes. I don't think last week he, you know, this interception was really all that bad. But you know, it's been a long time since he's had a turnover free game. So you hope that he can do that this week. Let's see. Ross Nimzen at R Nimzen asks, who needs to step up with all the injuries? Now, this question was actually sent before the news came out Thursday that Quintez Cephas was out for the season. You know, on Monday, He was ruled out for this week, but he's out for the season now. Chris Orr is out for this week. Dakota Dixon's still questionable. Garrett Rand is questionable. Isaiah Laudermilk is questionable this week. Chris James is still questionable. You know, like we mentioned earlier, PV is still not here, and George Rushing is out too. So there's like Ross mentioned, there's a lot of people out, and I think the people who need to step up. I think Arrington Farrar is a big one. You know, he's a guy that hasn't got a ton of playing time this year. He switched from safety to inside linebacker in the spring. I feel like maybe he's a little bit more prepared, you know, right now to take over as the number three inside linebacker with Orr out than maybe he would have been earlier in the season if he was forced into this role. But with Orr out, you know, I think you feel good about T.J. Edwards and Ryan Connolly as starters, but you can't just play two inside linebackers the whole game. You got to at least rotate one more in there. And Farrar's going to play a lot more than he has at that position, and I think he's got to step up. You know, I think as far as the wide receivers go, you know, Danny Davis, A.J. Taylor, and Kendrick Pryor are really your definitive top three. And I think all three of those guys need to step up, but they have been playing well this season. You know, Danny Davis is really stretching the field for them. He's just getting back from an injury. Kendrick Pryor, since he came back from the moped accident that he suffered during fall camp, you know, he's been playing well and made a couple big catches. And then Taylor is becoming a little bit more sure-handed than, you know, he did have a drop a couple weeks ago, but I think he's starting to clean that up, and he's starting to have a little bit more sure hands out there. And he's going to have to, you know, he's kind of, you could argue he might be the number one guy now, so he's got to really step up and give them a lot. Let's see, Trader8Ball asks, has Lottie lost his job? You know, I'm not sure about that. We'll have to see kind of how they distribute the punts going forward. You know, Connor Allen got the first couple against Indiana, which we didn't really see coming, but then they put Lottie out there for, I think, the third punt. Lottie going out there and got one as well. And then I think Connor Allen might have taken one more after that. So, you know, I kind of, when Connor Allen first went out there and took the first punt, you know, I kind of thought Lottie would still be, you know, would still come in for the shorter punts. He's been really good at that. You know, he's been really good at pinning teams inside the 10, and he's really good at the Aussie style kick. But I think Connor Allen did have one as well where he pinned, he kind of mishit it, but he pinned Indiana back at the 10-yard line, kicked the ball out of bounds at the 10. So it's going to be interesting to see how that works out. I definitely think it's clear that there's a lot of competition for a starting job. You know, Wisconsin is last in the Big Ten and punting average right now, so I think it's a battle between those two. If I had to just guess, I would say that both of them continue to get work until one of them maybe starts to separate. You know, we'll have to kind of see how it plays out. And, you know, I think this is going to be a pretty low-scoring game against Iowa this week, so I think there will be some punts to be had for Wisconsin, so we'll see which guy's out there. Let's see. Somebody asked who will step up in place of Cephas, which I already went over. Let's see. John Hermanson asks, protections seem to break down on the right side of the line against Indiana. Thoughts on how they hold up the next few weeks? That's a good question, because it was kind of surprising. You know, the right side of that line did definitely have issues, you know, last year in protection, and they seem to have really cleaned that up this year. You know, David Edwards is kind of emerging into a star right tackle for this team, and he kind of had a really off game, I thought, against Indiana, and you know, struggled a couple times. And you know, he is the guy that gave up the pressure on the Hornibrook interception. He recognized the stunt from the defensive line a little bit late and let the guy get around him. And you know, I guess we'll just have to see if they can clean it up. You know, I think for most of the season those guys have been doing pretty well over there. So we'll have to kind of see if they're able to clean that up. I think they'll play better this week. You know, just based on the fact that they had done a lot better through 8 games before last week. But I think it's something to keep an eye on for sure. You know, I think that if teams start targeting the right side of that line to kind of test them and see if they can get some things to work over there, that's something to keep an eye on. Chris Burke at Chris_Burke asks, with all the injuries forcing the next man up, how much credit is being given to the coaching staff? I think you do have to credit the coaching staff a lot for that. You know, I mean, I think they do a good job of developing their depth. You know, I think a lot of the guys that are stepping in, and we talked about Farrar earlier, he's a guy that He's a guy that was playing safety not that long ago, switched to inside linebacker in the spring, and it seems like he's starting to come on and maybe prepared to take on a bigger role. You know, Ryan Connolly is a guy that was a walk-on who the last 2 years has developed, last 2 or 3 years really has developed into a really good player. And, you know, without him, they would be in a really bad situation at inside linebacker right now. You know, some of the young receivers who are already ready, I think Ted Gilmore's done a really good job with that group. You know, Kendrick Pryor's only a redshirt freshman. Danny Davis is a true freshman, and they're already making plays. So obviously, there's talent in those guys, too. But I think the coaching staff has done a pretty good job of developing some of their depth and getting some of those guys ready to play. Let's see. Bill Woj at Slow Creek asks, can you give us a list of a few of the players that are not on the two deep that you think have a bright future with the Badgers? That's a good question, Bill. You know, I probably should have done some research on this before I start press record. But, you know, I think a couple of the guys that that I was pretty impressed with, I guess, during developmental practices last December, which is, you know, it's when you get the best look at the young guys, I think. You know, during spring and during fall camp especially, and in the spring too, you're, you know, the first teamers, first and second teamers are still getting a lot of reps, and you don't see the young guys as much. But I think during those, they open some of their practices to in December to that are just the young guys, and that's where I kind of saw last year that Isaiah Laudermilk would be a really good player for this team, and things like that. And I think a couple other guys that haven't really got their chance yet, you know, Keldrick Preston, I think could be a good player for this team. He's a outside linebacker / defensive end, I guess you could say. He might be able to play both in the future. But I think at some point he's probably going to make an impact. You know, a guy that I've actually was impressed with last December as well, who just started the last couple weeks because of injuries that he's gotten at least just a couple reps here and there is Adam Krumholtz. And he's a walk-on, a redshirt freshman walk-on who, is still not going to get a whole lot of reps the rest of this season unless they suffer even more injuries at wide receiver. But I was actually really impressed with him, and I think he's going to be a player for this team. And he's only a redshirt freshman, and he's a walk-on, and he's already, you know, with the injuries they have, he's probably their fifth receiver right now. So I think at some point, now the receiver group is really young, so it's going to be hard for him to break into that rotation over the next couple years. But I think at some point he's going to make an impact for this team. Let's see. Bill also asked, how do you think attendance would be in Indianapolis if a two-loss OSU team was playing a two-loss Badger team? Yeah, you know, that it probably wouldn't be that good, would it? I mean, there'd be absolutely no playoff spot on the line. I mean, it's still the Big Ten title game. Ohio State, those two fan bases still travel well. You know, for Wisconsin, I guess they've, you know, I think with the expectations they have right now, if they were to lose two of their next three games, and the fact that they've been to that Big Ten title game a lot in recent years, I think a lot of fans probably would skip that trip. You know, OSU travels well. But then again, whenever they're in the title game, it's usually with something bigger on the line as well. So, yeah, I don't think it would be very good. I can't give you a number, but probably would not be good. Let's see. Bill also asked, any exciting 28 recruits Badgers still have a shot at? You know, I don't think so. I mean, I'm sure they'd still find a spot if a big guy was suddenly wanting to commit, but their class is pretty full right now. So as of right now, I don't think there's anything on the horizon there. Let's see. What's our next one here? Oh, this is a good one. Drew Hansen at Drew Baru. He asks, are the 2017 Badgers better than the 2016 Badgers? Also, is there a consistent error Hornibrook is making with his interceptions, or is it a variety of things? The first question first, you know, this year's team versus last year's team, that's actually something I've been trying to kind of debate in my head throughout this entire season. I can't really quite figure it out because I think last year the team got tested really early on. You found out pretty quickly how good the team was. You know, they played LSU to start the season, and then by the midway point they had gone to Michigan and played and hosted Ohio State. And they beat LSU and played these other two opponents really close. And so you knew by the middle of the season, this is, this team is up there with the best, and they're really good. Now, this team, you know they're really good, but then again, they haven't really played anybody of that caliber yet, so it's hard to know exactly how good they are. You know, if I had to guess, I think this 2017 team is maybe slightly better than last year. I think it's really big that they were able to replace those outside linebackers from last year and still get the same type of pressure, or maybe even more pressure than they did last year on the quarterback. That was probably the biggest concern for this defense, and so I think this defense may be is really, I think it's as good as last year, even though we, you know, they haven't really been tested this season. I think they're right up there with last year's group, and then the offense, I think, has, you know, a little bit more explosiveness. You know, I think losing Cephas really hurts, clearly, but to have a guy like Jonathan Taylor, they didn't have that that guy with breakaway speed last year. You know, Corey Clement was a really good running back, and I think he was pretty underrated during his time here. You know, he, as far as Clement goes, you know, he was the starting running back for, you know, the 2 years that Wisconsin's offensive line was in the most transition. And then, of course, he's had the injury that kind of held him back too his junior year. But I do think with Taylor, you have the top-end speed that Clement didn't have, and you had the home run threat there. And then Cephas, with the breakout season he was having, you know, before he got injured, I thought he was a bigger third receiver than anybody they've had since Jared Aberderis. So I would say this team is a little bit better. Now, I am curious to see when they finally play. You know, these next couple of weeks will be pretty telling against Iowa, who's ranked number 20, and then Michigan could be ranked next week if they win again. I'm sure they're probably pretty close in the college football playoff rankings to jumping in there. And then the Big Ten title game. You know, whoever they play in that title game, it's going to be a good team. It's going to be a team that's probably ranked in the top 10 or right around that range. So we'll eventually know how good this team is. You know, I think they're, if I had to guess, I'd say they're slightly better than last year's team, but it's really hard to say right now. And then your other question, is there a consistent error with Hornibrook's making with his interceptions? Yeah, I think it is a variety of, I guess it is a variety of things. You know, sometimes he, you know, I think sometimes it's just bad. Sometimes he doesn't see a defender. You know, I think there was the one against, I can't remember what game it was, where, you know, Fumagalli, he read man-to-man coverage, and Fumagalli beat his guy off the line, but somebody dropped into coverage that he wasn't expecting, and he didn't see the guy. You know, so on a couple of them, he hasn't seen the defender. On a couple other ones, it was, you know, it was just a bad throw. You know, I think there was one where it's hard to remember which interceptions or which games, but there was one early in the game where he just sailed it over AJ Taylor's head, and it was intercepted, and then you know, this one last week, he was just hit as he was thrown. So, and then there was one, I remember there was one of Danny Davis a while back where it was just a miscommunication between him and Davis. So it is a variety of things. I think it's more just about being a little bit more careful. You know, there's been a couple interceptions that haven't been his fault necessarily, but on the ones that have, I think it's just being a little more careful, making sure you put the ball on the target, which he is a pretty accurate passer. But just trying not to force the ball in there and making better decisions. Let's see, David Jurgensen at Dr. Dave asks, are Van Ginkel and Johnson the favorites to start at outside linebacker next year? What are Bonds and Bell's prospects looking like? That's a good question. I think with the emergence of Tyler Johnson, I think it's going to be a real battle between Van Ginkel, Johnson, and Bond for the two starting spots. You know, I think with those three guys, I think it's going to be a battle. You know, I think Zach Bond is a guy that was going to have a pretty good year. He's a really athletic guy who I think is going to be able to get after the passer. But I think Tyler Johnson has played fantastic this year, and I think Van Ginkel is starting to come on too. And yeah, Christian Bell, I haven't seen, you know, much of him because he hasn't played at all, and you know, we don't get to watch practices during the season, and you know, we've seen some of him during camp and things like that, but I'm guessing he's still developing. You know, I'm guessing he would probably be the fourth guy next year. He'll probably break into that rotation, but I think the starting spots are probably between the other three, you know, Van Ginkel, Johnson, and Bond. So we'll have to see how that plays out. You know, I've been really impressed with Johnson. You know, I think heading into this year, we thought Bond and Van Ginkel were going going to be the definite number two guys at the position, but I think Johnson has really come on, and I think he's definitely got a shot for a starting job as well. Let's see. John Hermanson also from earlier asks, with the injuries at wide receiver, do you think they try more plays like the Engel TD to get some backs involved in the passing game? Yeah, I think they definitely could do that. Not only – so the Engel play was just a really – I thought it was a savvy play call. And I talked about it in my film room story this week on Madison.com. That runs every Tuesday. You know, it was just a matter of that they saw Indiana when they were in heavy personnel. They were sneaking everybody toward the line of scrimmage. There was – if you go back and look at Engel's touchdown, all 11 guys for Indiana were within about five yards of the line of scrimmage. And they faked a power play and – everybody kind of scooted up a step, and Engel just slipped right behind everybody, and it was that simple. I mean, it was a play that they also ran against Purdue last year for a touchdown, and you know, they tried it later in the game too against Indiana, but Engel got a little held up, and Hornibrook had to go to the other side to find Pryor for a first down catch. I think they could definitely do more of that. I think with the way teams are stacking the box against Wisconsin, you have to take advantage of that, and you have to run some play action, and you have to take some shots down the field, and you have to trust Hornibrook a little bit. You know, I know he's probably made, you know, a few too many mistakes here during Big Ten play, but you have to be able to take advantage if you're getting that man-to-man coverage and teams are sneaking up to the line of scrimmage. You know, they're definitely going to still try to establish the running game, but I think plays like that Engel touchdown are things that can really – break a game open for you when teams are selling out against the run. And that Engel touchdown was 10-0. That's a touchdown that made it 10-7 and kind of got Wisconsin going. It was a really big play. So I think they can split some of those backs out wide too. You know, Rashid Ibrahim has split out wide some this season, especially in empty sets. And you know, I think Ramish can even do that too. And of course Fumagalli can as well, so I think you may see a little bit more of that with some receivers out as well. Let's see, Sean Lingsweiler at Lanzarus21 asks, which freshman wide receiver could contribute most at this point? Do you think they would burn a red shirt? They aren't really going to try and utilize Dunn, are they? As of right now, it's hard to say. You know, those freshman receivers, we only saw a couple weeks in camp of them, and they weren't really getting any of the meaning, you know, any of the first or second team reps. What we've seen from those guys is a very limited sample size, and it's hard to come up with too much of an opinion on those guys from what we've seen, at least, since we haven't seen practice since mid-August. I don't think they're going to burn a red shirt. I definitely don't think they're going to do that. They still have three, you know, scholarship wide receivers they feel really good about and have made a lot of plays this season in A.J. Taylor, Danny Davis, and Kendrick Pryor. And then I think you can go with those three. You know, Krumholtz and Dunn have gotten a few reps here and there. I don't think they're going to rely on those guys much. I think, and like I mentioned just a second ago, you know, you can split Fumagalli out wide more, or Penniston, or some of the backs. So I think they're going to do that. I think they would do that, you know, before they burn a red shirt on one of those freshmen. Whether those guys are ready or not, I have no idea, but I think they'd rather, you know, regardless, I think they'd rather not burn the red shirt, and I think they have some other options. You know, I think they would have to suffer, you know, at least one, if not two more injuries before they thought about, you know, burning one of those red shirts. Let's see, Nate Samplowski at Big Dog 547 asks, if Ohio State had the same schedule as the Badgers had this season and were unbeaten, do you think that Ohio State would be ranked in the top four? You know, if Ohio State had the same schedule and they had the same results as Wisconsin against that schedule, I don't think they would be in the top four. Now, it's impossible, you know, it's hard to say whether name brand really plays plays a factor with the college football playoff rankings. You know, you'd like to believe that it doesn't, and you'd like to believe that subconsciously the committee doesn't allow that to affect them. But even if it did just slightly, I don't think Ohio State would be in the top four. If they had the same results as Wisconsin. Now, I think if Wisconsin, with the same schedule, had gone in and dominated every opponent they faced, I think they would be a lot higher right now. I think a lot of their ranking is not only their weak strength of schedule, but part of it is also because there's been a lot of games where they haven't dominated those bad opponents. Now the Northwestern win looks a lot better than it did at the time. But 8-point win over Purdue, 14-point win over Illinois, those are the kind of things I think that are maybe holding Wisconsin back from being at least, a spot or two higher. Now, I think, so I guess that's the I'd like to think that it doesn't matter whether it's Ohio State or Wisconsin. Yeah, but even if it did have a slight subconscious effect on the committee, I still don't think Ohio State, with the same results Wisconsin has had against the same schedule, would be in the top four. Maybe that puts them up a spot or two, but I don't think that I'd like to think that that doesn't matter at all. Maybe I'm just being naive. Let's see. Ethan13 at Ethan_Goffel. I'm not sure if I'm saying these names right. He asks, because most of our wide receiver crew is out, which wide receiver needs to step up and take the role of leader for the wide receiver crew? I guess I already talked about that a little bit, or quite a bit, actually. But, I think those top three are all capable of making big plays. And I think A.J. Taylor is the one that probably really needs to step up. He's the one that's only one really their only receiver left that's not a freshman. He's a true sophomore. And he's a guy that's, I think, taken a lot of big steps from last year. He had a terrible case of the drops last year, and he still dropped some this year, but he's starting to clean it up. And I think that he's got to take over a bigger role, and I think he's got to be the guy that really steps up. Christian Babcock at CB_journalist asks, how much chaos would it take for a 12-1 Wisconsin team to make the playoffs? That's a good question. Honestly, before the season started, I thought that 12-1 would get Wisconsin in. I did. I didn't expect their schedule to be quite this bad. I thought BYU would be better. I thought Nebraska would be better. I didn't think the West would be this terrible. I thought that 12-1 Wisconsin as a Big Ten champion would get them in, and I even argued with someone on Twitter about that. And I think I'm definitely wrong at this point, but what would it take for them to get in at 12-1? I think the one loss would have to be, one of the next two games. I don't think they could lose the Big 12 championship. The Big Ten championship game, and still make it in regardless. But if they, let's say they lost a close game to Iowa this week, or to Michigan next week, and then they won out and had an impressive win over Ohio State in the Big Ten title game. Obviously you would need a lot of chaos. Let's just say Alabama and Georgia are probably both in. You would need probably no. I don't even know where to begin with what you needed to happen. I'd call it probably borderline impossible. I'm sure that you'd have to have a ton of upsets. You couldn't just go through and say, Miami beats Notre Dame and then Clemson beats Miami. You'd have to be more like, Florida State needs to beat Clemson. You'd have to have some major upsets and many of them for that to happen at this point. So I definitely wouldn't count on that. I think if Wisconsin loses a game, I think it's over. Andrea at Lifeophobic asks, will the Badgers ever win the Rose Bowl again? Yes, I think at some point they will. It's interesting, this year the Rose Bowl is a college football playoff site, so if they make the playoffs, they could be in the Rose Bowl. And if they win the Big Ten it's going to be funny. If they win the Big Ten and don't make the playoffs, then they actually are not going to go to the Rose Bowl. So the way the playoffs work now, it's not always that Big Ten Pac-12 game like it always has been. But I think at some point they'll definitely win the Rose Bowl again. It's going to happen at some point. This program has been a top 10 team the last couple years, and it's going on the right path with Paul Christ. And I don't think that I don't think they're going anywhere anytime soon. I don't think Christ is going anywhere anytime soon. And I think they're, especially with the way the divisions are separated right now, they should be the class of the West. and go to a lot of Big Ten title games and have a lot of opportunities to get to Rose Bowls. Let's see, I believe this is the last one. Douglas Richard at drich318318. He asks, how will Hornibrook attack that secondary from Iowa since they will probably stack the box to stop the run? Yeah, I know I talked about this a little bit earlier. I think Iowa will probably, stack the box like every team has against Wisconsin. I think Iowa's got confidence in its front seven to stop the run, but I think when you have a team like Wisconsin that's going to line up with a lot of times with three tight ends or two tight ends and two backs and a lot of one wide receiver sets, then you no matter who you are, you got to put at least eight in there to give yourself a chance. And I think for Wisconsin, like I mentioned earlier, you're going to get some one-on-one opportunities, and even without Cephas, who I think was really good at winning those matchups, you have to take advantage of your play action game and in the one-on-one matchups you could get with your, whether it's Danny Davis or AJ Taylor or Troy Fumagalli as well. I think they can get him going too. So they're going to have to trust Hornibrook, and he's going to have to come through for them in a big way at some point over these last four games if they remain undefeated. That's going to do it. I appreciate all the questions. We got a lot this week. I hope you guys enjoyed this version of our mailbag. Make sure you join me for a live chat on Twitter on Saturday after the game against Iowa. And keep visiting Madison.com for all of your Badgers football coverage. Thanks for listening.